Hello and welcome to the Guys Like Us podcast. This is your host, Tyler Brondike, and today I'm joined with Peter Greer, who is the CEO and president of Hope International and a leader and an author, so stay tuned. Hello and welcome back to the Guys Like Us podcast. This is your host, Tyler Brondike. Today I'm joined with Peter Greer, who is the CEO and president of Hope International. He's a leader and an author of many books. Most recently, he has a book out called Lead with Prayer with a couple others as well. It's a fascinating book. It is all about prayer, looking at prayer habits, practices of leaders from across the globe. And there is some similar themes that emerge. We talk about what the challenges are to prayer, how it does require some intentionality, some discipline, to cultivate this. But then also the way of prayer, how often we go to prayer seeking needs, but can miss the presence with God personally, how God is with us in the midst of prayer. I love the analogy. It's a conversation on the phone that doesn't hang up. Isn't that so true? Isn't that so true that God is with us, is for us, and is the door is always open? Oftentimes we open and close the door and create these time slots, but that perhaps isn't the way of Jesus. And so excited for this conversation. Know it'll be impactful, beneficial on all things prayer. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Peter. One more brief but important announcement from our friends at Thrive Marriage Lab. You want a thriving marriage, and yet maybe you and your spouse find yourselves more defensive than curious. You feel like more like roommates than lovers. You're conflicted, not connected. You have more distrust than intimacy. So you've probably read the books, you've attended different conferences, and you know your marriage needs more than that, but you don't necessarily want to start traditional marriage counseling. And so the Thrive Marriage Lab is the solution between books and counseling. Serving up hope, not prescriptions, once a year, the doors open to this unique 12-month journey, which starts very soon. In fact, it starts in the next few days. And so it's led by experienced marriage counselors. Members receive live and recorded monthly engagement through intentional pathway, guaranteed to lead to more curiosity, intimacy, and connection. And so as a faithful listener, you'll get $20 off each month when you use the code GLU. Go to restory.life/thrive to learn more and join today. And now our conversation with Peter. Peter, thanks for joining me and the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Tyler.
Yes. So excited. You know, we're just launched a book in collaboration with Ryan and Cameron. And so, would love just to kind of get a little bit more into the book, I think, really to start. I think it's such a fascinating topic on prayer, lead with prayer, that I think, just spending, investing more time into this would be a good use of our time. So would love just to hear, it's how it's been going these last few years. I know it's been a few years of research. Really, what prompted you to research this topic and to start to work with Ryan and Cameron on it as well?
Yeah, so the book started when Ryan reached out and said, "Hey, Peter." And if you haven't had time with Ryan, I mean, he lives with enthusiasm. So I reached out and said, "Hey, Peter, I would love to do a book on prayer and researching the prayer habits of world-changing leaders." Mm-hmm. And the more that he talked about this, my response was, "Ryan, that sounds like an amazing book. I can't wait to read it, but I am out." I am out. Right. And I think part of that initial reaction just personally was, when I look at my own prayer life, we had just had a day of prayer, a day set aside, and I had the hardest time praying. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of pacing, not a lot of praying on that. And so here he is reaching out saying he wants to do a book on prayer. And that was my reaction. Yeah. I really do want to read this book, but I'm the wrong person to be involved in writing this book. Hmm. But did something crazy the next day, decided to pray about it. And the overwhelming sense was, don't miss out on the journey. Like, don't miss out on the journey. And I am so grateful that did start a journey where we had the most incredible conversations, Tyler. I couldn't believe who answered our calls. I couldn't believe the vulnerable way that individuals welcomed us into their prayer lives. Mm-hmm. And going through this project over the last couple of years with Ryan and Cameron, I would say every single one of us, it has transformed our prayer life. It has transformed our prayer life. And then the prayer culture that we have in the organizations where we work, it has been an enormous privilege to learn together. So that's the story.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. And so you're, you know, with Hope International, you're a nonprofit, you know, faith-based ministry leader. You know, you're cultivating this in your organization as well, which is really encouraging. We'd love to hear more kind of how we can, you know, I know part of the book was developed, you know, was on the multiplication of the prayer life in the culture. So we'll get to that. But for you, it's funny because I'm not a natural prayer guy either. And I'm like eager to learn and to read. And I'm like, oh, I don't know. It doesn't come to me naturally. But recently I've been prompted to press more into prayer as well. And I've been actually shocked of how, you know, my prayer life has changed. So we'd love just to hear for you personally, what kind of, how was that journey for you? You mentioned there's a lot of change that happened within your life. Would you mind just giving us a little window into what that looked like for you as you started to pray and as you started to consider, and what changes you've been seeing?
Yeah, well, I mean, the starting point, I would say if someone said, hey, Peter, how satisfied are you with your prayer life? I would not give it a 5-star rating on that. Right. And you start looking at the research, and even among pastors, only 16% would say that they are very satisfied in their prayer life. So sure. The vast majority of individuals are saying, man, this is an area I would love to grow. But then the other kind of convicting piece was it also was clear in the research that for many leaders, as influence goes up, prayerfulness goes down. For most individuals, the reliance on their gifting, their abilities, that takes the place of this utter reliance on God to show up. And I think those stories that slowly over time become an preoccupation with your abilities, your skills, it misses the absolute beauty and power of learning more about this incredible mystery of prayer. And so just personally, you asked about the journey. The personal story was, the first is I have intentionality about all kinds of things. I think about this year, what do we want to do to grow? And there are plans and there are structures. And never in my life had I ever created, like, what's a way to grow in prayer this year? And so this is not a new concept. It's called a rule of life. It's been around for over 1,500 years. But this idea of saying, if it matters, we're going to structure it. And if it matters, it's going to find its way on my calendar. And if it matters, there are going to be daily and weekly and annual habits and rhythms that I create time and space for. And that is never something that I had done. I kind of prayed when I had time and margin. And that is not the way to really cultivate a vibrant prayer life. So a huge piece was just the planning, the preparation, the timing, and more time and space. And then coupling that with, and there are just so many more practices available for prayer. One real simple one is the connection between our physical posture and prayer. I never experimented with that. I never, you know, prayer for me was I'm lying down in bed and I'm going to say a quick prayer before I drift off. That might not be the best way to have a vibrant, engaged prayer life on that. So anyway, from the physical practices to learning more about just this incredible set. And the one piece that I didn't mention was, you know, we had conversations with global leaders of movements, and every single one of them would say prayer is upstream from these movements that they were a part of. And none of them just winged it. None of them just tried to, you know, pray when I feel like it. It took time and planning and intention, and it has been a great joy to learn and to emulate some of those practices.
Yeah, I'm laughing when you mentioned that as you're drifting off, dozing into sleep, you're let me shoot up a prayer, and it's like this. I resonate with that certainly. But there is a discipline, there's intentionality, there's a habit to cultivate, a way of life, a rule of life, as you mentioned. which is really encouraging. And so at the beginning, you mentioned you were surprised that some of these leaders were so open to talk about it. And as I was looking at some of them, you know, you have some pastors, but then you have folks from all different walks of life. And so we know pastors love to talk. So we do know that they're happy to talk about their prayer lives. No, but just curious, what was so shocking? What were, what did you begin to learn as you started in this process about just the prayer, their prayer lives, kind of on at a diagnostic level?
Yeah, so I remember one of the conversations was with Johnny Erickson Tata. And so she is someone who became a quadriplegic when she was still before the age of 20 and has lived with chronic pain every single day of her life. Mm. And, you know, I think there's this sense that if prayer is just coming to God and getting what we want, then if anyone has the right to be disappointed, it's her. The prayers for physical healing have not been answered. But she shared something incredible. She said, you know, when people come and ask for prayer, I do pray for them for whatever the issue is that they come. But she said, I pray no more than 20% for that particular. And then the other 80%, I'm praying that God would be at work in the midst of the challenge, that God would be at work in the midst of that. And that would change our prayer life, right? Mm-hmm. If it's not just, here's what I want in the timeline that I want it, what if part of the incredible answer to prayer was an experience with God, God with us? You know, one of the other people highlighted Psalm 23 and how this psalm starts out in the third person. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. But then it shifts. And it shifts from talking about the Lord to you. It goes to the second person. And do you know when that shift happens? It happens in the valley of the shadow of death. That's when the experience goes from the Lord to you are with me. And I feel like that perhaps was an unintentional but inspired shift of David to say, like, I'm talking about the Lord. But then when I am in the valley, that's when it shifts to you. You are with me. And that's what we heard again and again. That this whole thing of prayer, it's so much more than here's the way to get what you want. Here's a way to experience the nearness of Christ. And that, I mean, that just changes the way that we pray, and even maybe what the goals are of prayer. And so anyway, there's so much more, Tyler, conversations, but that's one moment that certainly stands out to me.
Well, you mentioned the nearness of Christ, and I think that's one of the most beautiful aspects of prayer that is illuminated when we're seeking after the Lord. And certainly it's amazing when God does answer these personal prayers and healing and these aspects, but you know, oftentimes it's really the presence of the Lord at a personal level, as you're not just the Lord above, but the Lord who's with us, that really changes our view of prayer, I think. And so there's something very significant in that. And so you just thinking through what you know, there's a lot of challenges to prayer. And so perhaps we can just kind of name some of these challenges and how we can kind of navigate and work through them. And so I'm thinking of leaders who are on the podcast here, and we mentioned these intentional ways to kind of get on, I don't know if get on track's the right word, but to really seek more time with the Lord. What are some of the roadblocks that kind of prevent us from doing that?
Yeah, I mean, how many of us wake up and say, I've got nothing to do today, right? Life is full, life is busy. And so if we are trying to wait for prayer until the time that we have nothing else pressing, we are never going to pray. But it is so interesting that if you look at the example of Jesus, we read as Jesus's ministry continued, there were more, not less, instances where he would pull away to spend time with his Father. And isn't that interesting? So I think the question for all of us is, you know, do we think that we are busier than Jesus? Do we think we have more demands on our time than Jesus had on his time? And we know there were long lines of people that were waiting to have that time and experience with Christ. So I think that's maybe a little bit sobering.
Great question.
And if it mattered that much, so Jesus would prioritize time in prayer, maybe we have room to prioritize it as well.
Yeah.
I love that. It's like the email inbox is never gonna fully evaporate, right? There always will be a stack of papers to work through, and it's just like it's so. Yeah, you're just reminded of really those sweet present moments with God, and it's like, yeah, and you're looking at Jesus retreating, and it gives us a great model. But you're right. I think you asked that rhetorically, but I think for a lot of us, it's true: is that we actually do think that we're busier than Jesus, even though we wouldn't say that. We act as if that's so. So yeah, I think you know you mentioned the practices, the habits, and so. Looked at you know wide variety of from my understanding current leaders, and I think they've looked back at some of the prayer ways of prayer, you know, of examen, of Lectio Divina, of some of the ancients of how they prayed as well. And so just would love to hear some what are some of these practices and habits of some of the folks that you're talking with.
You're exactly right, Tom. I mean, part of what was so interesting was doing the research and looking at the habits that have been around for so many years, like Lectio Divina, certainly one of them, the examen, looking at that, looking at the way that decisions were made throughout history and the discernment process and the way that prayer was used in that. So history was really interesting. And then also to match that with some of the current practices of leaders on that and to kind of find this merging, this melting of ancient practices mm-hmm. and perhaps just new little twists on that of what it looked like. And so our hope is not that this would be a prayer book that would be read, but our hope is that, and we try to design the book, that every chapter is not here's what we can learn, but taking these examples and then an invitation, try it out. Try it. Try some of these tools and see what help in your own prayer life. And so trying to make it as practical as possible, bring in the ancient as well as some new stories that people probably haven't heard about what it looks like to grow in this habit and discipline mm-hmm. and ultimately discovering joy in prayer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so just as I was thinking, it's like you're going through this research process. I think we have perhaps some assumptions of what we think, right, leaders will pray. This is a general sense, but then we're always illuminated by surprising aspects that actually personally really, you know, impact our prayer lives. Like, oh, wow, I was surprised to see that, to hear that. Kind of, you know, let you speak for yourself, but also if you have insight into Ryan or Cameron of as they were doing these, you know, having these conversations, what were some unique things that as you guys were kind of talking afterwards, yeah, wow, that really resonated with me. That was maybe new that I haven't, that maybe not a lot of church leaders or ministry leaders were maybe as familiar with.
Yeah. So I think one of the interesting things was that we were not only writing this book together, and I have to mention too, it was not just Ryan, Cameron, and I. Jill Heise was the person who was the master weaver, taking our three different voices and bringing them together. And there is no question this book would not have happened without Jill Heise. So super wow. grateful.
Yes.
She was every bit the part of the team from the beginning to the end. But, you know, I think one of the interesting things is, so here are the four of us as we're researching this. It was research and then application. So all of the things that we were inviting individuals or discovering and then eventually inviting people to try, we were the guinea pigs. We were the first ones. Hmm. And every single one of us, I think, would give a slightly different answer to the same theme of there are new habits and practices that have impacted us. And so one of the real simple ones was this idea of practicing the presence. Originally, it was Brother Lawrence, but this idea about bringing in the day-to-day, doing the dishes. How do we do that in a way where one person said, you know, it's as if I have a conversation with Jesus and I just never hang up the phone. It's just always wow. open and bringing it through the day-to-day and then matching that with and times of actual retreat. I had never been able to take more than a 15-minute time to pray, if I'm being honest. Like, that was max capacity, and probably average for most Americans. It is in the under 5-minute category on that. And so one of the pieces was to have more, one person said it's like wasting time with God. Mm-hmm. This idea of just more conversation and wasting time is what friends do, right? you're not there with your agenda. And here's,
right.
And so what does
right.
it look like for us just to have more time and space in that? And Ryan created these prayer cards, which are really just kind of guided prayers that intentionally take much longer. If you're really going to be prayerful and go through them, prompts and prayers and scripture, all kind of mingled together to engage in prayer. So,
yeah.
Tyler, I could go on that, but those are some of the ways that that we've been impacted. But then
nice.
The last half of the book, as you said, it's taking the personal practices and then saying, okay, how do we now create a culture where prayer is prioritized?
Right. Yeah. Just a note on that. I love that analogy. I think that's useful. Is it's a phone call that where you're not hanging up, you know? Because I think sometimes it's just like this whole show. We have to get ready for prayer, and then it's like here's the time slot, and then it's like, all right, time's up. And I think it's like
right.
that conversation aspect is like you never fully know how long that conversation is going to go, you know, especially with a friend or someone you haven't caught up with in a long time. And so that posture, I think, is great. And then, yeah, I mean, just this morning, you know, I'm like, you're right. We rely so much on our own strength. And I think that's a tendency for myself. And I would probably assume for other folks listening too of, nope, I know how to do this. Let me just kind of grit my teeth and, you know, here in New England, pull myself up by my bootstraps, you know, that mentality, and just keep going, right? Because that's what's going to get us. But no, it's the dependency on the grace of the Father to be with us, to let go, and to seek Him in those moments of stress and pain. And and then oftentimes, right, it just softens everything that we're doing and gives us a new perspective. So we'd love just to kind of turn a little bit toward the building a culture of prayer, how that's baked in really to everything that is part of your, you know, whether it's your house, whether it's your, group of friends, your church, your organization, whatever. So would love just to hear how that, you know, especially, you know, I know the book was, from my understanding, guided a little bit toward leaders. So would love just to hear kind of as you started to do that research, what came out?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. And if you look at, I've got my bookshelves here on the left, and there are so many books about the leadership practices, about
right.
this is the way to lead. And then there are other books that are about prayer. But there are not many that try to intentionally overlay the two of them. And very seldom is there actually this exploration of what are the prayer habits of leaders, and what are the areas that we can learn and grow. And so that's really what we were trying to experiment with. That's what we were trying to learn with. And I think it doesn't matter if it's church leadership or leadership in a nonprofit or in a school or whatever, nonprofit, for-profit, for individuals of some influence, how do we combine prayer into that realm or space of influence? So that's really what we were exploring on that. And so the first kind of part of the book is all about the personal prayer habits. How do we grow in understanding of prayer, but then not to stop there? And it's almost like take it from the prayer closet into the prayer boardroom, not just in the sprinkling of a little prayer pixie dust before a meeting or afterwards, but to really say, what would it look like for us to see part of this role of a leader is to be a person of prayer, to pray with and for individual and collective. And one of the great things, Tyler, that was so much fun is we found that these principles apply nonprofit, for-profit, small, large. We found praying leaders in all kinds of different settings. Two of my favorite stories that unfortunately are not in the book. We had these two interviews with Fortune 500 leaders that are doing an incredible job incorporating prayer into their leadership. And both of them had legal teams that would not give the final sign-off that we needed to include in the book, which I was really disappointed on that. But their stories were so inspiring on that. So anyway, that was also fun of saying, who are those organizations that have built a prayerful culture and what can we learn from them? And hopefully, again, the goal is it's as practical as possible to invite people into that journey of not just personal prayer, but then inviting others into that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'd love just to hear some examples. I mean, if you can, you know, share in general without using the names of these two folks, how did that take on flesh in their workplace environments? And if you can't use those, you know, what are maybe two of your other, you know, favorite kind of stories that really kind of demonstrate how that is ingrained and really kind of flushed out into, you know, their teams?
Yeah, well, I so appreciate it. I can't share this, but it's in the book. But David Denmark from one of the largest foundations, the McClellan Foundation, shared the story of how he really wanted to create this culture of prayer. So he created a place for it. He created this, whole system around it. And the line was, he wanted to create like a wildfire of prayer. He saw how valuable this is. But felt like it barely lit a spark. And for him, the message was, I've got a model before I multiply. So he kind of did the heart journey and then just started inviting a few others in. But the work started in his own heart and there was growth there. And then this invitation in and really starting small with just a few individuals. And then almost it's like the multiplication of anything. It's then when it works with a few, then someone breaks off and starts another, and then space does matter. And then allowing individuals to take time and thinking through how do we have those places and what are the structures that help not to be overly programmed, but to have some sort of a structure. When we gather this day, we're going to be bringing the needs of the global church. That's what we're going to be praying for. And next time we're going to be praying for needs in our own families and communities and churches. And just that, again, it's simple stuff, Tyler. Mm-hmm. But with thought, with planning, with intention, our experience is, it does have the ability to change us and the work that we do.
Well, that's good. One of the things, right, as I'm thinking about it, especially for leaders, right, is there's a public prayer life and a private prayer life, in a sense, right? And so we have our, right, the prayer closet. Then we also have these corporate times of prayer where others are gathered around us, two, three, or more, right? And so did you guys kind of look at that or notice any differences was in kind of some of the prayer practices, whether in the personal life versus kind of the more public corporate gathering?
Yeah, we did. And I would say this is a little bit of a difference between what we heard from the global church and what we heard from those in a North American context. Yeah. But if you Google prayer and then look at images, they are all individual images. It's of one person on there. And I think there is this essence of prayer is seen as an individual activity. Hmm. And yet when we had conversations around the world, it was much more, no, this is a community activity. And it's so interesting. Even when the disciple came to Jesus, he did not say, Jesus, Lord, teach me to pray. No. The question is, it's plural. Lord, teach us to pray. Even in the way the invitation was, it was teach us how to pray. And that was what we learned from the global church, this incredible way of collective prayer. And again, for many leaders, they have had their personal prayer life, but for a variety of reasons felt like it is difficult to invite others in. But we have found, again, one of the things we wrote this book in community with each other. Mm-hmm. We started praying in community with each other, and there is something different. There is something does change when it is, just as you said, those not just one, but when two or three gather, there's something that's special that happens there.
Yeah. And so with that, I'm just thinking of, you're right, there's this, I think across cultures, you know, there's different ways of prayer. And, you know, if you're, you know, Korean, you have a certain way of prayer practices, you know, early in the morning, rising. Where I am, a lot of folks of African descent and will come and pray. And there's a new sense of kind of how they're coming together around prayer. And then we kind of have the more, you know, I don't know, this is like pietistic type prayer or more personal devotional individualized prayer, which is just different. And we see kind of that mosaic And so it just, yeah, it's really fascinating, I think, to see that throughout. And I know you've, you know, well-traveled, spent times in different countries as well. And so, yeah, just, you know, was there any other major kind of differences you saw between a lot of folks here are listening and are from the United States, and perhaps we, you know, in our congregations and our context, we do have folks who are from different parts of the world who are introducing us to new forms of prayer, but kind of the global church, is there anything that stuck out that maybe we should think about as we're kind of refreshing our prayer life?
Oh, Tyler, that is such a great point. And I guess more than a specific practice, I think the posture of if you are from a particular context, a particular tradition, is it possible that there is more to explore about prayer? And is it possible that we have a whole lot to learn from the global church? And I would say yes to both of those questions. There is so much more to explore. And that was the fun. Let's look in history. Let's learn about the different prayer habits and postures and practices. And let's listen to the global church right now. What are the prayer? And I remember one of the early interviews with Ryan that he did. And it was this question with one individual that has been serving for in a war zone, an extremely difficult environment. And she said, early on in my life, she said, I wanted to tithe, but I didn't have the financial resources. There was no income. But she said, what I did have was my time. And so I started tithing my time. I started praying over 2 hours every day. And I've done that for the last 30 years. And I'm like, 2 hours a day. Tell me more. Tell me more. What do you do? Like, how? And so that really was just one of the early examples of saying, we have a lot to learn.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. No, it's amazing. One of the other things as we kind of wrap up was in some aspect you tied in fasting with prayer as well. And so I think for a while, like my church tradition, that wasn't emphasized, the fasting element, and been kind of illuminated, awakened to it recently. But would love to hear, and I don't, know if this was something new for you guys, or if there was a kind of some new illumination that happened or new insight that happened in some of these conversations. But what kind of was the linkage between prayer and fasting?
Yeah, it's really interesting. This was, again, the global church. Mm-hmm. Almost all of them, we did not start with a chapter on fasting, but almost everyone brought it up as if it were a common practice. And it is not common practice according to the statistics, but it is common practice around the world, and it is common practice historically. And then the other interesting thing is, even in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, when you fast, not if you fast. It is taken as an assumption that his followers would fast. Don't make a show of it. Don't make a big, you know, public appearance of it. But the assumption is that that is also part of the spiritual practices of what it looks like to deprive ourselves of something so we can connect to someone. And that changes, sharpens our prayer.
Yeah. Love that. I think fasting just really shows our dependency on God as well. And also kind of removes the idolatry of the things we think we need in our life, when in fact we really, honestly, you know, if we're honest, we don't need them. and especially food, you know, some of us are just so trained and accustomed to when we eat, how often we eat. And it's when that gets thrown out of funk, it causes us to depend on the Lord more, and brings us closer back to the presence aspect, which I think is great. So fasting, it's often a practice that we, it seems intriguing, but one of the ones that requires intentionality as well. I don't know about you, but not many of us will fast, especially if you like to enjoy good food, which I certainly do. So, well, Peter, just kind of as we wrap up here, just any kind of final word of encouragement, advice, or just where we can find you.
Yeah, I mean, final encouragement is just resonate with the question the disciples asked Jesus: Lord, teach us to pray. And I don't think that is a past tense request. I think that is a request today for all of us. And I really do believe there is so much more to learn and grow in exploring this incredible gift of prayer. Yeah, and if anyone wants to learn more about the book, we made it as actionable as possible, but you can go to leadwithprayer.com, and there's prayer cards and systems and assessment and other ways that we found to be helpful. So all kinds of free resources at leadwithprayer.com. And then, yeah, if anyone wants to learn about the work that we do at Hope International, how we're living this out, hopeinternational.org. And maybe we could put this in the show notes. And then just personally for me, peterkgreer.com is where I blog and write as well. So
awesome.
That's the update. Tyler, thank you so
thank
much.
You,
what a
Peter.
Gift to have the conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you.